Fads come and go, and nowhere more than in the world of weight loss. That's why Noom's weight management programs are made to last. Noom uses science and personalization to help you manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps you build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's N-O-O-M.com to sign up for your trial today.
Before we get started with tonight's episode of Benched with Bubba, I want to talk to you about RotoBaller.com, proud sponsor of the show. Do my written content over at RotoBaller.com, and this podcast is a part of the RotoBaller Radio Network. So I want to let you know that football season quickly approaching with you guys. Win big in 2021 with RotoBaller.com's NFL Premium Pass. Are you ready to dominate your season-long in DFS leagues? RotoBaller's NFL Premium Pass and Draft Kit include rankings, projections, and cheat sheets for all formats. Get exclusive draft articles, DFS tools, lineup optimizers, and premium Slack chats. Join in on the winning and take 50% off any Premium Pass. Use promo code Bubba, B-U-B-B-A, for another 10% discount. Just visit rotoballer.com/radio, sign up today, and start rotoballing like a boss. Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 413. I have a returning guest to the show, a good guy, a great guest, a guy I like to talk to on and off the air. You can find his work at Baseball Prospectus. He's got at @Jag_fantasy for you best ball folks out there, and at @DRHOA3 for all your injury news and concerns. Derek Rhodes, how are we doing, my friend?
I am doing well, Bubba. Have you settled back in from Arizona? Are you still basking in the glow that was first pitch?
I'll be honest, like when I see people tweet out clips from games, I just want to be back there so bad because it was, I know people think it's like over glorifying things, but just to be able to turn off your brain and just appreciate baseball and just talk baseball basically 24/7, it's a pretty fun thing when you love baseball.
When I did it in the fall of 2019, it felt like it made it so much easier to slip into baseball prep. Like I just felt like I got a dump of information. And then it was like I just kind of slid right into the prep for the year. It seemed like so much easier. And now I feel like I didn't get to go this year. And so I feel like it's a hurdle that I'm having to jump through to get started.
Yeah, I'm dragging right now. But the one thing that conference did do is I had my phone out and I took like notes on a bunch of things I want to try to start digging into. So the ball got rolling, let's put it that way.
Yeah.
It's just kind of on an uphill trajectory at the moment. But eventually it's going to hit the peak and come on down. But it's a great thing. And we've said before, like anybody that can go, I highly recommend it. I know it's not for everybody. It's, you know, there's price points, there's all kinds of things, but it's awesome. Like if you're a baseball fan, a fantasy, but even if it's not even fantasy, just baseball.
No, just baseball. Yeah, I agree.
It's awesome. So highly recommend checking that out. But we're going to talk some injuries. Like I said, we're going to talk some best ball. Before we get into all that, why don't you let everybody know, because it's been a while.
Yeah, no, it has been a minute.
And last time I had you on, you were not yet working at Baseball Prospectus. No. So why don't you let everybody know what's going on?
I think last time I was on, I was just a guy, as
you
it were.
Just a guy.
So now I do, as Bubba said, you can find me on the Twitters. I am kind of two people at this point. Right now I do injury stuff for Baseball Prospectus. I maintain their injury database. I also do a lot of visuals for them. I work with some great guys over there. Some great folks, I should say. It's not just the fellas. It's great all around. And so some of the stuff that I was able to do in the past kind of on my own, I now do over there. Not necessarily the exact same thing, but a lot of the same type of tools. So like the injury tools that I kind of was probably talking about a year ago, a lot of that stuff is over at Baseball Prospectus now. So if you want to check that out, feel free. I also will continue to pub best ball stuff because that is what I'm addicted to and I cannot stop and you can't make me. And that I'll be posting, you know, that kind of content over at over on the Jag. Oh crap. Is it bad? I can't even remember. I can't remember fantasy. my own second burner account. No, Jag underscore fantasy. The reason I can't remember is because it went through like four iterations before I settled on one. But Jag underscore fantasy is where I'll post like best ball specific stuff. So ADP and trends and stuff like that. So
yeah, I'm looking forward to it because it is best ball season, even though some of us are
starting
to like you're already, so you said five in so far.
October is best ball preseason. November, the season has started.
Yeah, I told you I'm trying to hold off to like closer to Thanksgiving, but I'll probably bite eventually. Like I went back. I ran six leagues. I might want to do a little more this year. We'll see.
Now we got to get to at least 10, Bubba.
Yeah. Well, I ran six, but then I was in one with you and some other ones. I think I was in around 10. Also, this morning, the NFBC opened
up.
So we got best ball tens. We have their best ball format. You're gonna be a busy guy pretty soon is what it
comes to. I haven't I was talking with Jeff Zimmerman today. I haven't dusted off my best ball tens sheet, so I'm gonna have to shake the dust off of that, make sure that the formulas are every year things change and the formulas break, so you gotta readjust.
And that's something we'll definitely talk about later on in the show, but I want to kick things off with the injury stuff because in recent years, injuries just getting worse and worse, it seems like, just crazier and crazier. You know, in 2020, a lot of it was COVID, a lot. Like, there's no denying that.
Well, and it was so short, right? So everything's just compacted into this two-month window where it just felt like every day somebody was out.
Yeah, it was wild. And then in 2021, it seemed like there was still COVID stuff, but that was much more under control, it felt like, maybe because at least there's protocols in place. You know, if you're vaxxed, you weren't vaxxed, there was different times to come back. You weren't just automatically done for like 10 days. Like there was things that didn't crush you.
Didn't feel as much chaos. It felt like 2020 was chaos, and 2021, while rough, the COVID stuff, it felt like you understood how it was going to play out. You understood what it meant and you could kind of plan from there. So yeah, I agree. It felt much worse in 2020.
Yeah.
The COVID stuff at least.
But as a whole, we know there was tons of injuries in 2021, especially it felt like earlier than later. Could be wrong. But how do you think like the year compared to other years injury-wise? How did it kind of play out for us?
So I have these exact numbers handy, actually. This is something we just pushed out over at Baseball Perspectives where you can compare the last 4 years. So for perspectives, in 2020, now there's only 2 month season, but some guys went on the IL before the season. Like it was kind of a weird year. Some guys got hurt in that initial spring training before the season started and stuff like that. But there were 560 IL stints in 2020. 2021, it was almost double. There was 1,183. Now compare 2021 to 2019 and 2018, there was almost 700 in each of those seasons. So it was a very big jump. And I think, you know, if you were a fantasy manager, you experienced it. You felt it. Every team was met, you know, had to feel it in some way. In to some extent, it did. Yeah, we did see it really peak early. Like it was hamstrings. It was, lots of arm soreness. Like it was all these things kind of hit early. And they started to tail off. By the time we got to August and September, we were actually basically tailing the 2019-2018 injuries. Like it was kind of like the number of guys getting hurt every week was about the same as 2019-2018. So I think that's good. Now, to some extent, that's just because a million people were on the 60-day IL.
So many people.
Yeah, exactly. Like at some point, it's like, well, the guys who are left, it's like survive. You know, they just survived. And we did see almost all season long, there were more players on the IL than there were in previous seasons. And so, you know, hopefully we can see some decline in that. Hamstrings were one of the biggest increase in injuries relative to like the other. So like, you know, if hamstrings were, this is just example numbers, but if hamstrings were like 20% of the injuries in 2019, it was like, you know, almost double. You know, it was like more like 30, I guess it's like 50%, but it was definitely more hamstrings relative to the other injuries. Another injury we saw more of were hand injuries. My only speculation is what we saw was maybe because they were messing with the ball, they were messing with the grip, that maybe there were just some more, you know, a little bit more in the blister category, a little bit more in the hit by pitch category, stuff like that, that just maybe it would have hit a different part and just happened to write up in it. I don't know. Could just be a blip, but it was unusual. And I think some of it was we saw guys go on the IL for stuff in 2021 that they wouldn't have gone on the IL for in 2019 and 2018. So like guys going to be out 5 days. Teams like, look, we don't have enough players. I have to put you on the IL and get another player here.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I was going to ask. Because we know we kind of speculated in 2020 was the case, but 2021 full season, was it the 10-day IL compared to the 15-day making right. like decisions? Like, you know what? Like you said, this guy's going to be out 5 to 7 days. Yeah, let's just throw him on the IL. And then there was times where you and I would like be laughing sarcastically on Twitter because there'd be a guy day to day for like 7 days and they throw him on the IL finally. It's like, goodness gracious. Like, what are you guys doing here?
And some teams did it more than others. It's actually one of the things on my list is to look at how many teams had players who were hurt but not on the IL. So like, you know, guys who missed time but weren't on the IL. Like, because I don't think that's a stat you want to lead in. Sometimes I guess you don't have another body to call up or, you know, but yeah. So like, for instance, like with hand injuries, there were 87 in 2021. In 2019, there were 41.
So over double, man.
Yeah, over double, but the average IL stint time was about the same. So, you know, I'm not sure, you know, I'm not exactly sure. I haven't dug into what happened there, but definitely something happened. Yeah. But I do think a big part of it was probably we saw guys go on the IL that maybe they wouldn't have.
Interesting. Yeah, no, it as you said, fantasy managers, we all felt the pain, and that's why like multi-position guys became much more popular. That was the thing, because there were weeks where it was tough just to fill the roster at times. Mm-hmm. It was also frustrating at times because they go on the IL Monday afternoon or Tuesday morning when things were already locked in, but that's out of our control completely. Mm-hmm. That's just teams being teams. But, you know, we're talking about the COVID issues, and we hope that that keeps getting better from year to year as things kind of go along here. You're fine. Trust me, my dog's going to do that any minute now.
Say Bear loves to speak.
Yeah, mine will do that too. But, do you think that it seemed like with your curve, maybe COVID, like the team started handling it better as the season went on? Like, I think it should be something we, knock on wood, shouldn't worry about too much going forward.
I mean, I think teams will continue to handle it. You know, we as a society will continue to manage it. I do not think we will see as many COVID IL related stints, or maybe I think a better way should say it. I don't think we'll see as many days lost to the COVID IL next year as we did this year. And I don't think that should be a controversial opinion. I mean, we lost, best we can tell, because they weren't always great about, you know, you kind of had to read the tea leaves sometimes on the COVID IL stuff, but best, you know, we could tell we had like 216 COVID IL stints averaging about 14 days each. Now, obviously, there's some in there that are going to be like a couple days for vaccination and some that were a super long time because it took him a long time to get back or the team didn't rush them back. John Lester is a great example of that. He was on the COVID IL for like 3-4 weeks, like while he was recovering, and they just didn't want to rush him back right there at the beginning of the season. But I think we'll see. It's going to get managed down. I personally, this is just my opinion. I should have said this at the beginning. I'm not a doctor. I'm a data guy who tracks baseball injuries. I am not, I don't have any medical background, but I think we will see a pretty sharp decline in injuries next year. I think that if you look at non-COVID injuries, we had about 900 of those. And I think we will fall back to something between what happened this year and what happened in 2019, 2018. So we had 800 or 700 IL stints 2019, 2018. I think we fall back closer to 800 instead. You know, so up from 2019, 2018, but down from 21.
See, that's interesting because, like, yeah, when you take the COVID out, then we're at least closer to 2018, 2019, which
still a bump,
but
yeah, it's still, and I was kind of ballparking it. It's like 950. So that's, you know, I don't want to do it off the top of my head because then the accountants will make fun of me for not being able to math that out. But it's definitely an increase, you know. So
oh, yeah, no doubt about that.
So hopefully we can get closer to splitting the difference there. That would be, you know, that
I'd be good with that.
Right. I mean, that's, you know, what we know is teams are more cautious. Players are pushing themselves farther. They're pushing themselves harder. You know, it's interesting. You know, I think depending on who you listen to, I think there are lots of folks who think that it's less about the way or that players are pushing themselves farther. It's just that baseball is behind in player health management and player keeping players safe, not safe, keeping players on the field. Not that I don't think it's dangerous, but keeping players, you know, preventing the injuries that can be prevented and mitigating the injuries once they happen. But hopefully we can continue to see some advances and we start to see some declines there.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense because you look at certain sports, they have like workout regimes and like actual legit like muscle guys that like your one job is to make sure these guys stay healthy, where not all, some baseball teams are doing it, but not all. They're still in the Stone Age kind of. So
yeah, and it's hard to know, right? It's hard to know, but there are, you know, as I've gotten more into reading about injuries, I think that there is a feeling that baseball is still pretty old school and has not really been as open to maybe some of the what you might call modern ways of keeping guys healthy and on the field as what you would hope.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And, you know, I'm not going to do this on this podcast, but that could start in the minor leagues, folks. We could start with them, feed them well and take care of them and see what happens. But we'll see where that goes. You said a lot of the injuries were earlier in the year compared to later in the year, which kind of makes sense off the short season. Let's kind of, you know, any little concern, let's shut it down, see what we got here and fix it. Overall in the season, did you see more pitchers or hitters hit the IL for you?
The split was I can't remember. Hold on just a second. Let me just look at this because I can't remember off the top of my head. I want to say the split was actually not too crazy off. But I think what we did see is maybe pitcher injuries happened at about the same rate, but hitter injuries happened more frequently. So pitchers got hurt. Pitchers always get hurt. They keep getting hurt. But hitters were the ones that we saw them jump in hamstring strains. We saw the jump in, those type of injuries. And it looks like actually by the time the season was over, they both were pretty steady and that they were both, you know, not one wasn't the culprit over the other.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
That's good to see because usually you think, at least I think, when I think injuries, it's like, oh, the pitcher, you know, their arm, the shoulder, something. Mm-hmm. But now with the hamstrings a couple of years ago, those oblique strains, it was all this like goofy stuff. And that'll be interesting to see. And we'll see what the hamstrings going forward because guys hitting home runs, not stealing as much, if we still get those or not. So that'll be another one to take out. So hamstrings, hand injuries, and as a Brandon Belt fan, that one stings big time because he got knocked out late in the season. But it felt like guys were going in more and quote unquote couldn't control it as much without the sticky stuff. So that'll be interesting to monitor too.
Yeah, I did, and you know, and between you know the fact that the enforcement of the substance, the sticky substances mid season, but then also the fact that guys are coming off a season which they didn't pitch as much, so you wonder, you know, it's harder to simulate live at bats than it is just to throw, and you had a lot of young guys having to get time. You know, I just think there could have been a lot of factors contributing to it, and I would not expect it to stay that way. That's another, you know, that's something I would expect to kind of come back down.
Okay, because that's going to be the interesting one to see is I've seen most people like going into last year thinking, okay, we're going to have a lot of pitcher injuries or whatever because of the shortened season, as you said. And then I've seen a few guys go, well, maybe they're going to have the repercussions next year because they ramped up this year to go to, like, I don't know. It's going to be interesting. None of us are doctors, like you said.
Right.
So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. But I am looking forward to seeing where the injuries continue to go. Before we go on to some players that are coming back from injuries or in the middle of injuries, were there any other takeaways from the 2021 season that really stood out to you?
No, I dubbed it the year of the hamstring because it was such a big, you know, increase to those injuries. I am curious, and I don't have this data. I've just started tracking it this year. We've already had quite a few announcements of players who are dealing with stuff through the season that have had surgery. I think I've got a list of like 10 or 12 guys already. That feels like a little more than usual. You know, we hear all the time about, hey, this guy was battling something, he's going to get right during the season, but a lot of surgery, core surgeries, a couple sports hernia surgeries, like some stuff that is a little, I think, caught me by surprise. It makes me wonder if more players than usual were playing through something and that maybe that we can get right this season. And we see some guys who were playing through stuff actually have bounce backs next year.
That'll be really interesting to track, as you said, because that's one thing that always stinks in a fantasy season is you don't know what a guy's going through, either injury, off the field, whatever, and then you find out about it later and you're just like, oh.
Or you don't, like, or you're just exhausted from fantasy until you completely check out and don't find it. Like, that's the hard part. It's like, you know, fantasy season's over, World Series is over. It's like the last thing I want to read about is player injury news, you know, but sometimes we find some stuff out. Yeah.
Yeah, it's the little things that actually continue to move the needles, surprising to many. But let's talk about some of these players because Ronald Acuna Jr., like I was watching his videos. He's working out. He's doing these things. And I'm getting kind of hyped going, okay, he's young. We've seen guys come back early from injuries and do this. I know ACL.
I've got some rain for that parade, Bubba.
Yeah, exactly. I know you do. That's why we're like, usually it's like a year, but he came out and said during the World Series, he's shooting for May. And I was like end of May potentially.
Yeah.
So, and my biggest concern with him and all my conversations was, okay, he'll be back for like 4 or 5 months. But the question is when he returns, does he run? Because that might be something that slows him down. When you see Acuna and you see this injury, what are you kind of thinking about him going for 2022?
Yeah. So the tough thing with Acuna, you know, number one, when a player comes out and has a timeline that is longer than what you were expecting, that should be a flag. Like you should go. Because I think generally players tend to be more optimistic and they're always, whatever the timeline is, they're looking to beat it. And I believe that timeline was based on comments with Alex Bregman, I think, was they were talking or something that came up. So, you know, maybe he'll revise that as the season goes on. I was reading an article about Royce Lewis. And Royce Lewis, he got hurt in late February. He tore his ACL, had surgery like right there at the end of the month, early March. And as of November 1st, was not yet sprinting. They were not allowing him to sprint. Now, he was taking BP. He was on the field. He's doing a lot of baseball activities, but he was not full speed. And he talked about in the article and hoping to be full go by spring training. Wow. So now, if you do that timeline to Ronald Acuna, then I think that you're looking more at May. I think that, you know, what's weird about ACLs is it's not a real common baseball injury. That actually shocked me. I didn't realize it. I went to try and find some examples of other guys who've been hurt, what their recovery timelines are. And there's not a lot of good examples. There's very few examples of guys his age too. The most recent example was Andrew McCutchen, but he was doing that in his 30s and he was going into, so he hurt in 2019, going into the 2020 season. He was not going to be ready for this, for the start of the season. Because of COVID, he actually ended up being able to play the full season, but he was not going to be ready for opening day. And I think his injury was actually a few weeks after Ronald Acuna Jr.'s. So I'm nervous. I think that both Ronald Acuna Jr. and the Braves are going to want to make sure he's all the way back. He's comfortable. He's comfortable in the outfield. He's comfortable at the plate, you know, making aggressive swings. You know, it's not like football or soccer. You don't have as many of these like cut moves and things like that that you worry about. You know, you're not juking players out where you have these sudden, but the player needs to have confidence. So I think you should probably set your expectation for May, for mid to late May, and then be pleasantly surprised if he comes back sooner.
Yeah, it's kind of like once he said it, and then I started thinking about it. I'm like, okay, because like when I think ACL, I think football. Because all
9 months, right? Right. Yeah.
A year max. And like you see these guys, even at 9 months, they're running, they're cutting, they're doing this. I'm like, cool, we're good. Acuna's young. He can, you know, bounce back. Mm-hmm. They got technology. And like I see him doing these medicine ball drills. He's moving side to side. I'm like, cool. And then when he says it, and then I saw your post about Royce Lewis and some other things, I'm just like, if Royce is saying that he's hoping for the start of spring training, well, that's like basically a full year, year plus a little bit. So, and that's just hoping like that might not even happen. So
yeah. And I think he was trying not to get his hopes up, if you will.
Which is fair, fair.
You know, I would expect him to be a full go for spring training, but I think that is more the timeline. And I think the other thing we run into is we remember the guys who come back sooner. We remember the guys who get back quicker. Yeah. I mean, like I'm a Packers fan. You're a Packers fan, Bubba, right? Yes. So David Bakhtiari, he hurt his knee in December and of 2020, and he's still not on the, he's practicing, but he's not, maybe he plays Sunday. So I think it's easy for us to remember the guys that come back earlier. It's harder to forget that, you know, it is a curve, right? There's a range of outcomes.
Everybody heals differently. That's for sure. So let's just hope with Acuna that he does come back. Maybe the DH will they'll bring him back just to hit.
I think that's possible.
That's possible because my biggest thing is you said a couple of things. First, they just won a World Series, so they're at the peak. Like they're not, obviously you want to win every year, but they can kind of slow things down for a second. They paid him to a big deal, like a longer term deal, not a big deal, longer term deal. Let's slow down the big part. So they want him there, obviously. They don't want to rush him back, re-injure it, and kind of have these things. I could see them slow playing, like you said. My biggest concern, and this is pure speculation, so I just want to get your thoughts because it's literally we're guessing here. When he does come back, do we expect the guy to run like he used to, or is it more like we might want to wait till 2023 for that kind of Acuna?
You know, it's hard to know. You know, again, like I said, because we don't have a ton of examples to fall back on, my guess is if he's targeting a mid to late May, then he's targeting like, I'm going to be back. Otherwise he'd be saying, no, I'm going to come back, you know, sooner. And so I would just, as my speculation, I don't think you'd look at a guy like him, young, talented player, and say, hey, don't go steal any bases. Like, you know, you're not gonna, hey, Ronald, you can hit singles, but don't leg out doubles. Don't, you know what I mean? Like, don't think they're going to do that.
And they're built differently. They can't control themselves. Yeah. Bryce Harper talked about it for years. The reason he always got hurt is because he played too hard, and he's trying his best not to play. And he played a full season this past year, but you could tell there's some plays in the outfield where he kind of took it a little easier because he needs to stay out there type thing. Mm-hmm. And so, Acuna's still young still.
Yeah, I don't know if you can expect him to steal quite at the pace he was before, but I also wouldn't expect a huge drop off. That's just my opinion. That's just, there may be some doctors who have a better perspective on that, or quite frankly, elite athletes who've recovered from ACLs. Yeah. But, you know, it's not a UCL injury. You know, it's not like so we'll see. But yeah. I'm hopeful. Let me put it that way.
Yeah, I'm curious to see how it'll play out because in the draft at First Pitch Arizona, we were all in the impression, okay, he's going to be back. Things are going to be good. So he went in the first round, I think like pick 6 or so. Obviously, that's you look back on that now going, oops, that might not be worth it. But I still think he somehow goes in the first 3 rounds in a 15-teamer because people go, it's only a month, like, or 2 months, maybe max. I can figure it out. We'll see. That'll be a fun one to track for sure.
Yeah, he's definitely been going in the first 2 rounds in best ball. He's going at pick like 13-ish, 12, 13.
That's interesting. That could pay off big. Fernando Tatis Jr. This is one that last year everybody was a doctor and could tell you what they needed to do and didn't do.
Yeah.
You know, the shoulder injury, popped it out a couple times. It looked like – I remember literally recording a show the first time I think he popped it out against the Giants, and the swing made me – like my stomach hurt because it looked nasty. He's played through it. He's gotten the job done. Mm-hmm. I'm still nervous of like it's going to re-pop, like it's going to keep happening. So what's your thoughts on him, like from an injury perspective, a timeline type deal? Because he's trying to play through it, but it's nasty.
I mean, timeline, he'll be ready for spring training. I mean, like, you know, he's to this point elected not to do surgery, which is a common approach to this. You go in there, you do surgery, you strengthen the structure around the shoulders. You're trying to prevent the subluxation, right, which is it's coming out of socket. So those – everything in there gets stretched and you do it once, it becomes more likely to happen again. Now, from what I understand, there are some alternatives to surgery. You can try, you try and strengthen the area and try and without surgery, try and strengthen everything and stabilize so that it's not popping in and out. I don't know enough to know if that's a good idea or not. I read people on Twitter, some medical folks who think it's not, is maybe not the best outcome. But I also think it's very important to remember that shoulder surgery is a big deal. And I think Cody Bellinger had that shoulder surgery last year in the offseason, right? He had his shoulder issue in the once, I think, in the regular season, and then again in the playoffs, said, I'm going to have the surgery. Now, he had a mess of a season. Lots of different things went wrong. He was never right. But, you know, I don't think we can pretend like surgery is like a magic Band-Aid that'll just fix it. This isn't, so I think it's okay to be nervous. I'm nervous. He obviously played. I mean, the stats he provided were more than sufficient for where he was drafted. Yeah. And he could do that again. You wonder if it gets to a point where maybe strengthening it without surgery doesn't work, and then he ends up having more shoulder issues next year, and then he decides to have surgery, right? That I think that's got to be your fear, is that it doesn't work, he has it happen a few more times, the pain becomes an issue or it happens more frequently, and then he needs surgery. I think it's in the range of outcomes.
Yeah, that's my concern. I think the end game, whenever it is definitely surgery. So is it 3 years from now? Is it next year?
Right.
Like, I think it's happening eventually. Just when's it going to happen? Mm-hmm. And that's the risk, because if you want him, you got to take him in like the top 3 or 4 picks. Mm-hmm. And so it's the risk reward factor. Like, I think in like overall competitions, phenomenal. Take him, run with it. And standalone, it's a little tricky. Mm-hmm. It's tricky to have that stability. We know Dave McDonald won't draft him unless he oversleeps. So we're good there. But it's a tricky one because Like, obviously, I'm not an athlete, a superior athlete like him. But the
you
way
look you, like one, Bubba.
Yeah. Well, you back in the old brother. School days, before guys actually started working out in baseball, I fit right in. But like the way you described, like, okay, you can try to rehab it and strengthen it. Well, I popped my knee out playing baseball. And the guy, softball, actually. Let me clarify that.
No. Softball. No, fast pitch baseball. Yeah. Bubba. I got
and,
you.
And the doctor looked at me and said, okay, we have two options. Because you never want to get cut on. That's the thing. Is they want to avoid that at all costs. So he looks at me and goes, what do you do for a living? I tell him, he's like, how often do you like do things? Okay, I tell him. And he goes, okay, let's just put it this way. We're going to rehab your knee. If it pops out again, we'll have surgery. I said, well, what's the difference? He said, if you were an athlete, we would have cut on you right now.
Yeah.
But you're not. So Tatis isn't me is what I'm trying to say. So that's why I'm concerned. We'll see how that plays out. But basically, take your risk at your Jacob DeGrom. The Mets, they kept trying to bring him back, but eventually shut him down. Thank goodness. I did not want to see him pitch last year. But he's not doing surgery. It's a weird deal. Like, we know the one thing is people need to realize, and I know you do, is every pitcher has a tear in their UCL. That's just what the natural motion of pitching. It's just how bad does the tear get to become an issue to have surgery. Mm-hmm. That's just how it goes. What are we thinking with DeGrom here? Because this is a mess right now.
Terrified. Yeah. there's a couple things that I don't like. We're getting a different explanation from DeGrom all the time. And I think he's trying to explain why he's going through this. And I think it's just, people are asking him about it and he's saying, well, I think it was this. And now I think the latest was, I think that my injury got exacerbated because of one of the, like the MRI they did, or, I think he seems to be at his, wit's end. He's obviously very frustrated, but I don't know that we ever have an answer. And I don't like it when guys go into the off season with an arm injury and we don't get to see them come back. And without some type of resolution with some, we know that there's something going on with the elbow. We know that, that is a risky endeavor. I don't like it. I'm nervous. I don't know if I will draft Jacob DeGrom next year. That doesn't mean you shouldn't draft him.
Yeah.
I just don't know that I will draft him.
And that's kind of where I am too. Like, I love Jacob DeGrom. We saw even in his 4 months he pitched, he still finished the year, I think, as SP1 or 2. Like, the dude was that good. It's just, this could happen after his first start.
Well, and I would feel differently if he's a guy who goes up there and throws 90 miles an hour, gets away on junk and stuff like that. But he's the guy who pushes his body to the limit. I mean, he's out there. He's increases his velocity every year, So just from what he's doing, it's not an easy thing he's going out there doing. He is, he's a guy who's just pushing the edge of what we can see pitchers do. Okay. And, I worry that maybe he's going to find the edge.
Yeah, it's a definite worry. Let's talk about one of his teammates. Well, it might not be his teammate going into this year. Is Noah Syndergaard, who he had issues as well, kind of came back and forth, but did throw a little bit towards the end of the season. It got some people at least optimistic for the upcoming season. What's your take on him going into 2022?
Definitely a good cautionary tale for Tommy John recovery when you go, especially when you're drafting, you're like, well, he had Tommy John this and he'll be back he'll be back by early summer. And he has a 6-week setback, gets shut down for 6 weeks, and then pitches just a little bit in September. So we just need to be cautious. I think always need to remember that, anybody coming back from injury, teams are very cautious. We don't assume that they're going to recover in the timeline, the most optimistic timeline. As far as his performance, it's tough because, Noah Syndergaard's last season was not the Noah Syndergaard that we had seen previously. And I think he had about a 4 ERA. He had a bunch of strikeouts. He pitched a bunch of innings. So, from that perspective, you obviously find value in that. But it's been a long time since we've seen Noah Syndergaard be Thor, what we want him to be. So, I think it's an okay risk to take. I think you should set your expectation for 140, 150 innings at the ceiling. I don't think you should expect him to come out and throw 200 innings after not throwing competitively in this last couple of years. I think that his price, his draft acquisition is an okay cost right now. At least on Fantrax, it's in the 150 ish. I think is where I saw him. That's after Severino, after Justin Verlander in those formats. I think that's okay. That's fine.
Yeah, you don't have to break the bank for him. That's for sure. So it makes it a little bit more entertaining, to say the least. Let's stick in New York once again. Carlos Carrasco, a guy that we thought would come back at last year. It's like, it's a sad story because the dude's good when he's out there, but it's been so inconsistent right now. Are you just like, this isn't happening for Carlos, or is there maybe a chance that we get a good Carlos this year?
He had a brutal season. It reminds me, there's a handful of these guys who just could not get healthy last year, and it seemed to affect them. Even when they were playing, it just, they didn't seem right. Bellinger, Carrasco, Zach Gallen, like these guys who just seem to stack up injuries. Carlos Carrasco, we found out after the season that he's been pitching through a bone fragment, some in his elbow. He had surgery to remove that, and it's expected to be back around the start of spring training. I think he's about as risky as he's ever been, but his price is more deflated than it's ever been. Or I shouldn't say ever. It's more deflated than it was coming into 2021. I think it's fine. I think he's a guy who I'm willing to take a risk on. And when I say where he's going on draft day, and by draft day, I mean slow drafts on Fantrax, you know, he's going like after pick 200.
That's not bad.
So, I mean, there is risk. I don't think anybody should pretend to think that he's going to come back and throw 200 innings, book it. But I think that's a reasonable risk at when you're talking about drafting a player that late.
Yeah, especially with Carrasco, because assuming he's healthy, and if it was just the bone fragment thing and they got that fixed and all this stuff, he's going to throw. They're not going to slow him down. Like, he's going to get his 150-plus innings, I would imagine. Mm-hmm. I'd be shocked if he didn't, because that's one thing he always did. He was good to eat innings. Great innings a year. So,
yeah.
And they need that. So I think he's a very intriguing option at that point. And since he's going so late, if it doesn't pan out, it's not the end of the world. We're taking a Jacob deGrom, obviously.
Right.
Big difference. Let's talk Clayton Kershaw. He missed most of the end of the season because of a forearm injury, which we know what that usually leads to. He's older, so wants to rehab through. We see that with a bunch of older guys. It's like, why get cut on when it's basically the end of the road? Tough decision with Kershaw going in 2022, huh?
Awful decision. Yeah. So he has soreness off and on during the season, more soreness in the playoffs. They shut him down. He gets a PRP injection. Manager comes out and says, no ligament damage. Teams love to use phrases to make people feel better that we shouldn't allow us to make people things that teams love to say to make no structural damage, they get very specific, especially managers. And it's not all the manager's fault because they're not doctors. But I do think sometimes, you generally don't see a PRP injection if there's not something that they're trying to, you use PRP to help kind of encourage healing, to help promote healing, to try and speed recovery. Sometimes you might use it for pain, but generally you use it for pain because there's something causing the pain. And so to say there's no ligament damage, okay, there's something going on in his elbow that's causing the soreness. They're trying to promote healing so that he can recover and come back to pitching next year. That should concern us. I think there's kind of a feeling in the fantasy industry that PRP is like guaranteed for Tommy John's the next thing. And I don't think that's true. But I do think that, you don't get a PRP injection unless something's wrong. True. And so I'm pretty concerned. I don't know what to do with Clayton Kershaw. I mean, the difference between him and DeGrom is you don't have to pay a top, for a first or second round pick for Clayton Kershaw. But you're still drafting him. I still think he's probably going pretty early. Where did he go in your guys's? Do you remember where he went in?
It was like, I want to say top 150 at least.
Yeah, like he looks like
around maybe later. Like, he's around 13th or something like that.
Okay. So he's going around pick 100, a little after pick 100 in these drafts. That's too early, I think.
Yeah, that's too early. Because what I would compare him to for what we know right now at this point in time, obviously things can change. Obviously he has to get signed by a team to start with. Mm-hmm. But this reminds me of the old Masahiro Tanaka towards the end of the times when he didn't want to rehab it. He took the PRPs, did these things. And we saw eventually it just kind of deteriorated. Mm-hmm. Like, you could stream him once in a while, but it wasn't dominant anymore. And there was a lot of starts where he's like, I'm leaving early type things.
Yeah.
And I think that'd be the headache you're going to get with Kershaw this year. Could be wrong. Could be very wrong. But it's not an easy feeling, as you said. A couple more here. Luis Severino. We saw him pitch a little bit out of the bullpen this last year. The Yankees are going to need him this coming season and their rotation because, you got some youngsters that might not be ready for the full road. We got some injuries. You mentioned Taillon before the show, which who knows when he'll be back.
Right.
So did we like what we saw to Severino that we can kind of run with him in 2022?
No, it's not that I didn't like what I saw from him, but as far as run with him, I think as long as you have reasonable expectations, I shouldn't say no, have reasonable expectations. Mm-hmm. You expect 180 innings, you will be disappointed. I feel very confident in that. This is a guy who's thrown a combined 29 innings across the last three seasons.
That's not good.
You can't expect the guy to come back and just, you know, go back into a full workload. So I don't know how the Yankees are going to approach them. I haven't read if they're going to try and do anything different, if maybe he starts the season out of the bullpen and then works his way into starting rotation, or if they're planning to start him from the get-go. If you expect him to go out and throw 6-7 innings every, you know, every turn in the rotation, I think you're kidding yourself. I just don't see that happening. This is a guy who's had some shoulder issues, had some arm issues. So I think that he can, I don't think that he can't be good. I just think we need to have reasonable expectations.
That's fair. That's fair. And like we talked about before the show, they have options. So they mm-hmm. can kind of, you know, slow play some guys, get those phantom IL stints. We could have stuff like that take place. Yeah. That's definitely possible.
Yeah. I think maybe when I'm adjust my projections, I'm probably looking at 120, 130 innings.
Yeah,
that'd be the ceiling that I would put on it. Yeah, now, it doesn't mean he can't. Good. Yeah, it doesn't mean he can't eclipse that. But that's probably what I'm expecting, quote unquote.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. Lance McCullers, we saw him get injured in the divisional series. Didn't see him the rest of the time. Hasn't even really been able to throw. So the inflammation or whatever is really preventing him doing anything. Mm-hmm. This is terrifying because the guy is always injury riddled. We know the stuff's great. He seemed like he was putting it together this last year, and then the postseason kind of ended that run. So, yeah. What are we thinking on him?
You know, flexor pronator strain, good luck. If you draft Lance McCullers, you know, I very much hope that he is healthy because he was so good. Yep. And he's fun to watch pitch. And, you know, and he seems like a really cool guy. But I think that he's been hurt every season since 2016. And that's not exaggeration. Every season he has missed more than the minimum on the IL. Like we're talking, you know, at least 3 to 4 weeks every season. Some seasons, the full season. And he's hurt. So, you know, I think if you're drafting him before spring training, it's because you're trying to, you know, you're just kind of gambling on him being healthy. And maybe that's not a crazy move if he falls far enough, because he was going pretty early in the couple drafts before he got hurt. There weren't a lot. I mean, you know, take that for what it's worth. It's a couple drafts. You know, I think at this point, until you see him pitch again in spring training, you shouldn't feel like he's definitely going to be back at some point. You know, he may be back at some point, but I think you should feel like it's pretty risky until we at least see him throw.
Yeah, that makes total sense. Mike Trout, the groin injury just appeared to be the worst groin injury in all of the
calf. Football. It was a calf.
Calf. I would have felt better if it was groin.
No, I think it would have been better if it had been groin.
Yeah, this calf, this calf injury just kept lingering and lingering and lingering and lingering, and he finally didn't play baseball again.
Yeah.
Like, I'm terrified for this. I know people still want to go back because it's Mike Trout, but the dude also, we've seen the tweets out there that he hasn't played more than, like, what, 140 games in, like, 4 or 5 seasons. Yeah. So what are your thoughts on Trout?
Well, from one perspective, I'd take 140 games of Mike Trout in the first round. If you told me that's what I was getting, I'd take that every year. But I am concerned. You know, I looked this up during the season, but the number of guys that have had serious calf strains like this, it's pretty low. Like, and the list isn't good. Like the number of guys who've had like multi-month calf strains, it's guys who have had chronic calf issues. So that worries you. Names that are on the list: Troy Tulowitzki, Josh Donaldson, Lonnie Chisenhall's on here. You worry about that. That's not what you want to see. I'm concerned. You know, not concerned that he won't be back healthy at the beginning of the year, because I do expect that. I'm concerned that we could have lingering calf issues. That maybe, you know, it's something that has to be managed now. I don't know what to do with it, guys. I've drafted him already once this year. So, like, I'm with you in, like, it is hard for me not to, because it is Mike frickin' Trout.
Yep.
But I won't pretend it didn't make me pretty nervous to do it.
Well, the one thing I'll say in best ball formats, and people so hate when you say, well, in best ball formats, but it's true, because, A, you're going to have someone to replace him at all times, unless your roster really gets messed up. You'll never get the same replacement level, sure. But secondly, in best balls, especially Fantrax, it's a points-based system, so stolen bases aren't as important. Mm-hmm. Where in a roto format, you can't just be punting steals all the time. So that really dings you. But in like points-based, where OBP is king, where Mike Trout is an OBP monster, you could legit like put him as like the top four or five player if you know you're going to get 140 games. And that's where I think your argument's very, very valid, that's what you're going to get, and that's pretty freaking awesome. There's still the – you mentioned Tulo and Donaldson right off the gate. Those guys lingered calf issues forever, it felt like. So I could see that concern as well.
Yeah, that's the concern, right? You just want to – you worry about it becoming a recurring thing. But, you know, I think
how they babied it and didn't rush him back, I think helps a lot.
The hard part about that is I think they wanted him back. I think the issue was it's, you know, and I don't know, again, not being a doctor, this is where it kind of, it does can ding, but it seemed like that he was trying to work through some residual scarring. And it just could not get it to the point where he was pain-free doing, you know, full effort baseball activities. Gotcha. So that concerns you, you know, it seems like it may just take some time. Again, if I can make a Packers comparison, Aaron Rodgers had like 2 or 3 years where he had a bunch of calf issues, all stemming from one really bad calf strain. That doesn't mean that Mike Trout will have that, but I think we can see this situation where we have calves can be kind of this, you know, reoccurring issue.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Last guy I want to ask you about, I know he wasn't on the outline, so if you don't have a ton on him, totally fine, but we kind of mentioned his name earlier in the Syndergaard talk. Mm-hmm. Justin Verlander.
Yeah.
We know he's been out with the Tommy John and all that good stuff. He's got signed somewhere first. And, you know, if you're Paul Sport, he's going to be a Tiger. That's what he thinks. But the way I've always looked at Verlander is he's older. It's going to be a short-term deal wherever he goes. And if he's ready to pitch, he's going to pitch. Like, they're not going to hold him back. So where are you looking at him going into 2022? Because even if it's like a month or two into the season, once he's playing is the way I see it. So how do you see Verlander?
Yeah, I'm, you know, I think Verlander is a nice risk to take. I think, again, we have to remember he has not yet pitched for, you know, we've not seen him pitch. Obviously, he's rehabbing from Tommy John. And I think from his perspective, he's like, it didn't make sense for me to try and, you know, Noah Syndergaard, I think, has different incentives than Justin Verlander, you know, to try and, you know, sneak back in and get a few bullpen innings or something like that. Verlander's injury was, let's see, his surgery wasn't until like September, I believe, of 2020. So he will be at, you know, by come March, he'll be at, you know, something like 18 months, give or take. I think he'll probably come back at the start of the season. That would be my expectation. You know, Justin Verlander's another guy, though, unfortunately, not just the injury. We had some performance concerns because he was, you know, had complained about pain and had changed the way he was throwing and was talking through some of that. Now you hope maybe with the Tommy John, he can figure that out and come back, you know, something closer to what we saw before he got hurt. But you can't assume after 2 years, a guy his age is just going to come back and just, it's just going to be there. But I do think he'll pitch. I don't think he's going to get babied. And he's the kind of guy who's a very competitive, you know, who's long been known for pitching a lot of innings, pitching deep into games. I think you can expect that when he does come back.
Yeah, we're on the same page then, because I took him in round 15 in our draft, and I was very pumped on that. I was like, I'll take the risk at that point. Let's go. Yeah. Syndergaard went like 4 or 5 rounds earlier than him.
So. Yeah, see, and in Fantrax, that's been flipped. Syndergaard's going after Verlander. Verlander's going in like the top 125 picks, 130 picks, something like that.
Right. And I think once he signs somewhere and people see him just throw like once or twice, that's going to continue to rise. It's going to be really interesting to see how that plays out. All right, let's talk some best ball here, as injuries are going to be fun to keep breaking down all offseason. So make sure you follow Derek on that one, as there'll be more and more news and fun stuff there. But let's talk some best ball, as Derek is one of the better best ball players out there. He plays tons of volume and does very, very good at it. He plays in all formats. If you want to get the idea of what formats there are, go listen to some of our old episodes. You can listen to that. There's Fantrax, there's Best Ball 10s, there's MNFBC now. There's like 4 or 5 others that feel like there's more and more of them coming up. So check all that out. We're just going to have some fun chatting here for a little bit. First off, I know you did well last year. How well did you do last year?
Yeah, it was a good season. As Bubba said, I've played a lot of different formats, Fantrax and the BB10 being the biggest ones I played. I also, last year, the NFBC released a $150 12-team best ball format, dipped my toes into those. Those did not go as well. It was better than break even, but not a lot better than break even. I ran up against the buzzsaws that were, Casey Cha and Phil DeSoe, and you know, it, They did
a lot
well.
Of big dogs yes. in those leagues. I yes, was like, there let's were. Go back to Fantrax.
No, there were. So those didn't go quite as well as I would have liked. A lot of cashes and no wins. So that's not what you want to see in that format. But overall, very happy. You know, when I tell people the style of best ball I play, my goal is my baseline goal is to double what I play. So if I you know, whatever I'm putting into it, and I would say this, if you're a person who wants to, if you want to go compete in overalls, you cannot have this kind of mindset. This is not the right mindset to compete in the main event or to compete in some of these other type of formats. But if you're the kind of person who says, look, I have this much money that can put into best balls or put into fantasy baseball, but I cannot lose it. Not like I can't lose it or I won't eat, but like, if I lose this, then I have to go get that money to build my little bankroll up again somewhere else. If you want to kind of like have a safer way to approach your bankroll, I think you should shoot to double up in your whatever you're investing in a given year. The way I do that is I spread it out across a lot of leagues. I play primarily in a 10X format. So 10X my entry fee. I think other people have a different approach who maybe focus more on a double up type of. So those are the format where the top 5 or 6 teams will double their money. And that's a nice steady way to see, number one, if you've got a feel for the style and the scoring and kind of test your mettle. I always think that's a good way to start if you're somebody who's new to best ball. So overall, I had a great season. It was, you know, more than double what I had in. Not quite as good as 2020, but I was very thrilled and you know, going to keep rolling into 2021. If you're extremely curious to what that looks like, you can go check out at JAG_fantasy. I've actually got my results posted for all my public Fantrax leagues and public best ball leagues. You can go check that out. I won't pump, you know, I don't want to be here pumping the, you know, being like the guy who's on, you know, who's like on gambling, you know, I don't want to be a tout, if you will, but I try and be transparent about, performance and stuff like that. So good season.
That's why I like having you back on because, well, for many reasons, but you do keep people updated throughout the year. Like when we start out the year, you said, okay, you're putting this much money here, mm-hmm. here's my player shares. Then you'd update it every couple months to keep people like, hey, here's where we stand. This is how it goes. Yeah. And so that's honorable because like, that doesn't always happen in this era. So that is very good stuff. And it also shows that you do know what you're talking about. So that's very good as well. I know you've been started with the Fantrax. We said at the beginning, you're five mm-hmm. drafts in. Before we get to that, though, what takeaways from 2021 did you have for the best ball that maybe you will use for 2022 or that will change how you approach 2022?
Yeah. So one thing that I really took a stand on in 2021, and I'm not sure that it was the right thing to do. I think it actually burned me, was I felt pretty confident that we would see a decline in innings pitched from a lot of pitchers. And so I really focused on what I saw as safer innings. So I really focused on guys with history, who historically pitched deep into games, who historically pitched, 180 plus seasons. Guys without that background, I faded. Now, some examples of guys without that background: Kevin Gausman, mm-hmm. Joe Musgrove, Yu Darvish. There was a list of guys who I just had none of, and that didn't work out this year. I mean, those guys, like, I think if you look at the list of guys who I faded for those reasons, almost all of them were better than where they were being drafted. So I didn't feel great about that. You know, I knew coming into the season that at least a chunk of my results would be based on whether or not that was a valid theory or not. And it wasn't. Thankfully it didn't kill me, but it definitely hurt. I'm going to try not to overreact too much to some of the stuff we saw in 2021, with the injuries being one example, but also with some performances. So I may be out on some of the guys who had career years in 2021. That's just my inclination to, you know, I want to see it, prove it before I will. I'm looking for guys who are going to exceed their value, not necessarily guys who are definitely going to repeat their value, although there's value in that. You know, obviously there's, you know, you want some of those guys too, but I'm, you know, I doubt I will have a ton of Kevin Gausman's, type guys again. So Kevin's going to burn me 2 years in a row now, I'm sure.
But you'll have a lot of Logan Webb. We know that.
Well, unfortunately, I have been sucked into Logan Webb. Yes.
I meant that tongue in cheek because I know that was a guy that we loved last year.
And yes.
Me or Brian Seymour were ever in drafts together, it was like, okay, who's going to pull the pin first? Yes. Who's going to do it? Because
I can't always be as objective as I want to be.
Yeah. Every every league I did well in, I had Logan Webb in. Every league I did not have Logan Webb.
It was a good recipe for success.
Yeah, like there's obviously other pieces, but there's certain ones when you get Logan Webb in like round 36 or something, whatever it was, some crazy, maybe it's 25. I don't know. Crazy number, though. You got great return. But it's true because, you know, guys coming off great years, you have to pay the price now. You're paying for that great year. So that's tough to justify. Like, I'm always a guy that don't pay for last year's success unless it's been proven. So I'm with you on that. We got to make a stand because, like, there's the Corbin Burnses of the world where it's like, yeah, maybe. Okay, that was pretty good. But
he's still really good last year.
Yeah. And but, like, one of the points that Derek made there is when it comes to best ball, and like I said, I'm not going to review everything, but we said it with Trout that OBP is king. So that changes the way you look at some players. Also, when it comes to pitching, the innings pitched are king because that just racks up more points. So that's why guys like Gausman all of a sudden pan out. Joe Musgrove, that's why he was mentioning these guys. Even when Darvish wasn't good, he still threw six plus innings almost every start. So he's getting your strikeouts and doing other things. And that's where he's kind of talking about those things stand out in a big, big way. You look at early ADPs, and that's why guys like Juan Soto, who is the OBP guru, he stands out up there, but you also see a bunch of pitchers going early. So I'm not going to just, you know, unpeel the entire ADP to people, but what are some of the things that stand out to you in a big way? Because, like, out of the gate, six of the first 12 guys are starting pitchers. Anything else really coming out to you?
That's a big thing. You know, if you're somebody who's like, oh, that seems crazy, this is Fantrax best ball. So they pitching is more valuable here than probably any other format you will play. And this is different than NFBC best ball. It's different than BB10s. So it's kind of its own little monster in that regard. What I think is a general, something that's just generally kind of, I'm struggling to wrap my brain around. The hitter landscape has changed some. You know, there's some new guys at the top, you know, Vlad Guerrero Jr. is back, you know, up in the first round after a monster season. You know, he's up in the top five in most of these drafts. But, like, the pitching landscape is just completely different. Like I am blown away by the different names I'm seeing in the first, second, third rounds compared to a previous year. And I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm just saying it is. It almost feels like in 2020, we kind of just ran it back for the 2021 draft season. I think a lot of people, not everybody, but a lot of people, especially at the top of the draft, said, look, it's 2 month season. We really shouldn't change our opinion that much about these guys at the top. So we're going to keep them pretty much at the top. And we came into 2021 that way. And then now going into 2022, it almost feels like we're like making dramatic shifts to who's in the top first round. So I can't tell if it's my brain that's just struggling to catch up with that, or if it is we're actually making, we just have so much more information after basically 2 months of being information or 2 years of not having enough information that now we're making these dramatic shifts in the types of players who are here in the top three rounds.
I think that's a lot of it. I think after that short season, we had so many questions of what to trust. And so it's like, okay, unless something stood out like a sore thumb, we're going to kind of resort to knowing what we knew before 2020 thing. But now we had a full season. So it's like, okay, this is what we saw. This is what we expect to get going forward. We'll see which is right. But just another stance on the starting pitching, 15 of the first 31 picks are starting pitchers. And I remember, you know, we talked about it last year on leagues that I know you go starting pitcher heavy most of the time, not all the time, because it depends on what.
I've been doing it less already so far this year.
And how you like it
early. We'll see. I don't have enough drafts completely filled to know how I like it. There are guys that I like. I think in years past, I was pretty. There was a group of guys in the first round who I felt like were the top three most valuable players in the league. And if I got any of them, I were thrilled. I just don't think that there is those three guys. Like Gerrit Cole probably is that guy for me in this specific format. Corbin Burnes, if I felt great about 200 innings, which, you know, maybe I should. That could be an issue on me because he obviously pitched plenty of innings this year and was great in the innings he pitched. So even at the amount that he pitched, he was really good. But I don't see him as one of those guys personally. I know that Smada is going to come through the screen at me and just get me for that. Not that he doesn't belong in the first round, because I think he does. I just – like I'm not going to make sure that I get him. You know, and so because of that, I'm kind of like, I don't know that I see as in this format specifically as big a difference between the guys going in the first round as the guys going in the second and third rounds.
And that's a great point, because that's one of the takeaways I had just from the draft and hold that I did the first 23 rounds of that we're going to continue on later. Pitching just felt so deep. Like when we recapped my team, I have in my first 23 rounds, I probably half my picks are starting pitchers. Like I just kept loading up on starting pitchers. which could be a detriment to me. It really could, because trying to fill in the rest of my roster could be tough. Whereas in like certain positions feel like they dry up so insanely fast. I know like last year we were focusing on like third base and other spots, and third base is dry again this year pretty quick. But there's other positions you need more outfield depth. You need this, you need that, where I could see the idea, because as you said last year, it was like three guys that were for sure top end pitchers. Yep. And then you had a rest. This year it's so intermixed. Like the Zach Wheelers are in the bunch. You have, you know, Flaherty dropped, Bieber dropped, but you have Woodruff up here with Burns. You have all these moving parts. Gossman's there.
Stale's back and healthy, yeah. Right?
Logan Webb's going to get a massive bump. There's so many guys now. And it's funny because in the grand scheme of things, if everyone was just completely honest and you just put a blindfold on, like crossed out, covered the names up, and you looked at all the stats, you'd be like, I got no problem taking two or three of those guys. Like, I can wait on two or three of those guys and live with it.
So. Yeah, it is tough when you're used to like, hey, Jacob DeGrom, 200 innings, book it. You know, and you just kind of, you did that. And you Max Scherzer, 200 innings, book it. And you just kind of, you know, and you'd say, okay, well, I'm going to take one of those guys. And now I just don't feel as good about saying that. Now, some of that is because there's fewer guys hitting 200 innings. But because there's fewer guys hitting 200, like, I think we're starting to see that kind of the ceilings coming down a little bit. But the floor isn't necessarily falling out. So if there's not as many guys throwing 200 innings, but there's a decent amount of guys throwing 150 innings, and the guys that are at that 150 mark, they actually come up. They kind of come up relatively speaking. So it is tough. I do think Fantrax is a single eligibility format. So if you're wherever you played the most, that's where you're eligible. So you're only eligible at outfield. So we're eligible at second base or something like that. And outfield and third base are awful. Like, they're awful. And some of it is because so many of these outfielders now are being platooned. And so you, in a format like this where you start five outfielders, you're gonna want 9 to 10 on your roster. How many of those guys do you want to be platoon bats? At least one or two of them is going to be pretty much guaranteed, if not more. It's not. And then some of the outfielders, you're concerned about injuries.
No, that's another great point, because some of us are inclined for NFBC or other formats where you get that multi-position eligibility, even in DCs and best balls, which is great. But yeah, that's one thing I learned early in my Fantrax ones that I kind of adjusted to the more I did last year, is you don't get that flexibility as you're drafting, going, oh, I know I can grab this guy later. And you're like, oh crap, I can't. He's like second base now, and I wanted him for third base and outfield. Yeah. And it's just like, this is a mess. So it does make you readjust things. That's why I remember a guy like we talked about last year, all of a sudden, like Rafael Devers takes a huge leap and stuff like that, because you just got this guy you can plug in to play pretty much every day at third base. And that's why these outfielders, Soto's already great because of his OBP skills. But, like Shohei Ohtani's high up here and he's outfield only. That's interesting.
Yeah.
But the Harpers of the world, the Betts, the Tuckers, like those guys are going to be huge for best ball this year.
Yep. Yeah. So it's been interesting. The early drafts, some of it is you only have a handful of drafts. You can't even really, calling this ADP is really generous. Yeah. But what will happen is the handful of early drafts will inform the rest of the drafts. And the handful of early drafts are going to be heavily dictated by how well the player performed in the most previous season, because that's how Fantrax defaults the rankings. Is before there's ADP, they default it to performance, and then once you start to get some drafts, then they start plugging in the ADP. We draft off of it because we're people, creatures of habit, and there's not very many projections. Steamer's out, but they're still tweaking the depth chart, where guys, how many innings guys are going to pitch and how many at bats and everything. So it's like everybody's kind of going off a feel, and so you tend to go by what you see. So we'll be curious to see, and this is something I'll post updates to, kind of comparing month to month where guys are going, if guys are moving up or down. Obviously, guys like Charlie Morton's just plummeting, which I don't know if I agree with, because I think he's going to be back in plenty of time.
It's a leg thing. I'm okay with the leg thing.
It's not a super, from my understanding, it's the type of the way he injured it is not as concerning as some other ways you might injure it. So I think I think he'll probably be back. I think he'll be all right.
Yeah. No, I'm with you there. Any other takeaways from these early drafts? Like I said, super early, like just looking at the ADP chart that you sent over, like the range in picks is so wild.
It's crazy.
Like you said. Yeah. It's just like it's all over the board because everyone's just kind of shooting from the hip at this point in time, where it'll tighten up as we get going, as more news comes out. Some guys will obviously climb because of news, but like Whit Merrifield, for example, He's gone as high as 19, as low as 58.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
have fun with stuff like that.
Well, and like, there's a group of pitchers that I'm as torn on, I think, as some other people in the 20s that I think is interesting. There's about a bunch of them that have an ADP in the 20s. It's Robbie Ray, Lucas Giolito, Aaron Nola, Julio Urias, Freddy Peralta, Sandy Alcantara, and Kevin Gausman. Those guys are all going within about 10 picks of each other in most of these drafts. That's pretty crazy. And honestly, I feel confident that it won't stay there. I think some of those guys will go up and some of them will go down, but it'll be interesting to see which ones go.
Well, yeah. And that's why we talked about it with the pitching. It's interesting because if you slide down farther, like another 10 to 20 picks later, you have Sale, Lynn, Castillo, Montas, mm-hmm. Barrios, Musgrove, Morton,
Flaherty. It's wild.
The pitching is so deep right now, at least at first glance. Obviously, so much
change, the perception. But, I think we have a perception of depth, with obviously that can be dangerous, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
very dangerous.
That's a perception, right?
I think that's where, like, in my other draft, like, I could have just easily stopped with three or four and felt confident, but I just kept adding to it because maybe I was, looking at the wrong thing here. And with the pitching injuries that happen so frequently, I feel like in a format like this, you don't want to be stuck holding the bag.
No, you want to be
able to run out guys to get those innings pitched, to get those counting stats. At least that's my mindset to the best ball format. So it's interesting.
But like I said, I've been pushing off pitching more than I have in previous years. I mean, I'm going into like the 10th round with one or two guys. We're in the before I might have three or four. But part of that's because hitting, we don't know where half these guys are going. It feels very uncertain this early in the year where half these guys are going to play.
I think there's that. There's the platoon factor you mentioned also. Mm-hmm. I think that's very big because those early picks, knock on wood, are less platoon eligible. Mm-hmm. So you know these guys, barring an injury, are out there. And I can go and pick up some third, fourth, fifth starters later that I can hopefully get some middle relievers.
Or even middle relievers, right? Because you know they're at least going to do something for you.
Yeah, I can go get some like Tanner Houck's or, stuff like that later on and pray that it pencils the pieces together one way or another. So, well, I'm looking forward to seeing how that continues on. Like I said, I'll start jumping in here in mid to end of November and get my feet wet. At least I say that now. I'll probably be in one this weekend or something. But that's my goal. I'm trying to stick to that. I know you're in the fifth one right now. What's your end game? How many do you plan on doing by the end of this?
It's a great question. I don't typically set it by number of leagues. I have a budget that I go into every year with, and I say, this is what I'm looking to play. And I kind of try and estimate where that money is going to go. I know I'm going to do this many of this kind of league. Last year, I ended up around a little over 100, 120, something like that. I may back down the volume a little bit, back up and increase the entry fee a little bit, just to kind of for my own sanity and manage my time. I only play in best ball for the most part. So I have the luxury of like, I will be busier in the off season than I will be during the regular season when it comes to fantasy baseball. So it's a flip flop schedule compared to most people.
Yeah, but that works. Like honestly, I don't hate it. I love playing my season long, but I love the best ball formats. They get you used to the player pool. You kind of get an idea where things are going. Obviously the Fantrax scoring is different than these other scoring systems, but you can figure that out in your head more often than not. But I think it really gets you kind of in the groove. And early on, you don't have to break the bank like the runs. Right. Like the ones I run are like $10 just to keep you honest. Like a little skin in the game. You can obviously go to much higher ones. They're all over the board, but they're definitely a good way to kind of keep things going when you know everyone's getting COVID or hurt in football, so you don't care anymore. Or it's fun. It's baseball. Yeah. So, but all right, Derek, we will wrap it up there. Go ahead and plug all your good stuff again before we head on out of here.
Yeah, you can for injury stuff, I tweet from my main account. That's at Dr. Hoa 3. It's DRHOA3. So I post injury observations as they come. I work over at BP. We've got lots of injury tools to help. I think it's great for fantasy baseball folks who want to do research on player history or research on specific injuries. We got a lot of great stuff over there. Subscriptions really cheap. You do it on a monthly basis. It's not a big deal. But all of that is behind a paywall, so I do want to be upfront about that. As far as best ball content, I do that just for funsies, and I'll share it all with y'all at JAG_fantasy, and I'll post stuff there that I think is interesting or trends that I'm seeing. Feel free to follow there. So I kind of try and split the accounts that way, and I'll be on podcast sharing stuff, hoping to do some live streams of some drafts this year. We did some last year. They were a blast. I appreciate you having me on, Bubba. I always love chatting this stuff up.
Always. Yeah. And we'll have to talk some more this off season and kind of get some ideas on where trends are going as things happen. And we need to do a live stream again. That was a blast.
Oh, those
are
fun.
I think it was a Saturday night. I remember that very clearly. It was me, you, Chris from Baseball Pods. I think Kerwin jumped in for a while. Like people started jumping in, they weren't even in the draft.
It was a blast. We'll definitely do some more of those. Those are too much fun not to do.
They're fun because we're just hanging out, shooting the stuff. But we also talk a lot of fantasy. Like we break down players, so it's a little bit of both.
Talk about picks. So it's good.
It's a really fun hang. So we'll look forward to that as well. But everybody, make sure you check out both Twitter accounts at @DRHOA3 and @JAG_fantasy. Get you everything that Derek has to offer and check out his work over at Baseball Prospectus. But for now, episode 413 in the books. Catch you guys later.
I don't know about you, it takes a lot to shock me these days, but to see our judicial system resemble a third world banana republic, to see trusted American companies embrace insane and destructive woke ideologies is frankly depressing. We must fight back, and that starts with changing the way that we spend our money. For years, big mobile companies have been dumping millions into leftist causes, and we've had to take it because another option didn't exist. Well, it does now. Patriot Mobile, America's only Christian conservative wireless provider, offers dependable nationwide coverage on all the major networks, so you get the best possible service in your area without the woke propaganda pushed by leftists working hard to destroy this country. When you switch to Patriot Mobile, you support free speech and religious freedom, the sanctity of life, Second Amendment, and our military, veterans, and first responder heroes. Their 100% U.S.-based customer service team makes switching easy. Just go to patriotmobile.com/America right now. Get free activation today with offer code AMERICA. Ask about their coverage guarantee while you're there. PatriotMobile.com/America. Again, that's PatriotMobile.com/America.